Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. And I found this very interesting. A Saudi teen was busted for dancing in the street. I guess you can't do that. You can't dance in the street. Even if you're 14 and you've got your little headphones on. Okay, here's what the problem was. He was caught dancing the Macarena in the middle of the busy road. So, I nobody wants to see that dance. So he should have been arrested. Oh, here's another problem that I found with political correctness. USC's mascot, which is a horse, and the horse's name is Traveler. And it's been, it's a symbol of ancient Troy. And the rider, with his costume and sword, it's a symbol of the Trojan warrior. And so here's the problem. Traveler, the name of the horse, also happens to be the name of Robert E. Lee's horse. So we got problems. Rebecca, we have serious problems. The poor horse.
Somebody has problems.
But they spell them differently. One is with two L's and one is with one. So.
Oh, well, that's legally distinct as an entity.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's the first thing I thought was, oh, that's the name of Robert E. Lee's horse. I wonder how they spell it. Who knew that? Who knew? I'm learning so much today.
It's so crazy.
It is. I'm not sure there's another word for it other than crazy. It's pretty nonsensical that this is what people spend their time worried and concerned about, as though we need to find more reasons to be offended by things.
Right. Meanwhile, there's other people doing important things. Like in 1891, Thomas Edison applied for a patent for the motion picture camera. Did this guy not do enough? Didn't he come up with like the light bulb?
He did a lot among many, many things.
This is an interesting man, and he is not sitting around, wasting time.
Yeah, just imagine all the things he could have invented if he had Twitter.
True. All right, it's kind of getting to be back to school time, and I don't want to over-discuss this subject, but it's an important one, and there's a lot of wisdom that we can gain from a lot of different sources, and Mindy Hine is on our studio line. We're going to bring her on in just a minute. She's from Compass, which is a Christian Educators Association. And it's really, what is it like for a teacher, an administrator, or maybe even a staff member of faith to be at a public school? And we need to pray for these people because it's not an easy job. We'll take a short break. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with Mindy Hine in just a minute. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour, and I'm really hoping this next segment is going to be very encouraging for all you teachers and educators and administrators that work in schools. I have on our studio line Mindy Hine, and I apologize for mispronouncing your last name. She's from Compass Christian Educators Association. Good morning, Mindy.
Good morning.
Now, we had the privilege of being we had a conversation many months ago. And now we're back because this is such an important topic. I know we've got a lot of teachers that listen to the show. And here's the question to get things started. What is it like for a teacher of faith to be at a public school?
Sure. Well, obviously, as the hostility towards our Christian values grow, it becomes increasingly more challenging. They have a lot of questions. How can they live out their faith? What can they say? What can they not say? How can they be authentic to who they are as Christians within the public school environment? And so we here at Compass are just here to support them, encourage them, not only Christian educators, but also parents and students who are also called to the public schools as well.
Now, Mindy, you're a teacher as well, aren't you?
I am not. I am a parent of three public school students.
Oh, of course.
My co-lead is a retired public school teacher, and so we work together in tandem. But for the last 4 years, we have come alongside, we have a community now that God has brought together of close to 900 parents and educators here in the Twin Cities area that cover over 50 different districts. So there are a lot of Christian educators out there, a lot of Christian families that are called to this mission field. And so it's been exciting to be a part of something that God is doing in our public schools.
All right, Mindy, so maybe you could just tell us how all of this got started, because this is so interesting.
Thank you. Yes. So Compass is a church-based public school ministry out of Grace Church in Eden Prairie, and it was about 4 years ago that God gave my co-lead, Noreen Shepherd, and I a vision to connect and equip the Christian community within our public schools. And it's really bringing together the body of Christ within our schools. Noreen is a retired teacher, kind of knew from a teacher perspective really what it felt like to be a Christian in the public schools, how isolating it could be, how lonely it could be at times. And as a public school parent, my husband and I felt confident that this was where God was leading our family. But really, as our kids got older, felt like there are some challenges here, and we became more and more, we really desired more and more to understand what our legal rights were, how we needed to engage as parents, how we needed to be praying for our schools, and just that we really wanted to connect with other believers that were called to the same mission field. So it was about 4 years ago that Compass was born, and it actually began very grassroots. We began with meetings in my living room and with friends and friends of friends. And like I said, now God's brought together a community of close to 900 educators and parents across 50 different districts. So it's been an exciting journey.
So as the secular environment becomes more and more hostile to any kind of Christian faith, and it seems to be being marginalized at every turn, do you have some stories that you could share of some teachers that have been able to really feel blessed or empowered by Compass?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, it goes back to the very beginning. I remember sitting around my living room, and I was just so inspired from the very beginning with some of these teachers, because they were really feeling God's call on their lives to not just by default end up in the public school, but that this was a very intentional plan that he had for them, and that they had a role to play and a job to do within the public schools. And so early on, I remember talking to teachers who just took a basic first step to start a prayer group of with other teachers in their school, and to just see how God blesses those little steps. Mm-hmm. And one teacher I think of specifically, started meeting with teachers in her building. Before she knew it, there were teachers meeting in every building in her district, and now they have an entire, what they call district staff for Christ, with over 160 Christian educators within that one district that meet together for prayer, for encouragement, accountability, and support. So another example would be teachers who are taking a step of faith right now to partner with parents to start Good News Clubs, which is a ministry of child evangelism fellowship, where they're actually coming together. It's an after-school club where kids are able to come every single week. The gospel message is presented right there in the public school classroom. Kids obviously need to have permission from their parents to attend, but teachers are taking that step of faith to really respond to God's call in that and start those clubs. And we're really seeing exciting things happening, kids giving their lives to Christ, having the opportunity to invite friends who maybe would never have had the opportunity to attend a church. So there's a lot of exciting things happening.
Oh, Mindy, that's so encouraging. It's so exciting to think that all started with prayer. And it started with the desire to support teachers in an otherwise very hostile environment. And then God is blessing them in amazing ways.
Absolutely.
I had a teacher send me a list of what they can and can't say at school. And I was absolutely stunned. I thought, how do you even do your job?
There can be some challenges, but I think one thing Compass does is offers quarterly religious freedom seminars. And one thing that we've learned through that is we really have dug into our First Amendment is, as Christians overall, we do have more freedoms than we do restrictions. And so, there there are restrictions, obviously, from the teacher perspective. They can't establish religion in their classroom, you know, that type of thing. But there are so many things that they can do. They can give students the opportunity to have a platform to share. They can definitely, you know, outside of contracted hours on their campuses, meet in prayer, meet in Bible study. So there are a lot of freedoms as well.
Mm-hmm. Mindy, I want to take a quick break, but when I come back, I want to ask you that Compass talks a lot about the prophet Daniel. I want to ask why, and I also want to open up the phone lines. If you'd like to ask Mindy a question, you can certainly do that, 877-933-2484. We'd love to hear from some teachers that are feeling encouraged this morning or discouraged or whatever you are feeling. You can let us know, and we'd love to have a conversation with you. It's 15 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute.
Praise your name from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name.
It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Mindy Heine from Compass. Compass is the Christian Educators Association and helping teachers and administrators and staff of faith at public schools feel like they have a place to belong and to feel encouraged and to be empowered to know how to defend their faith in an otherwise difficult situation. So, Mindy, why do you like to talk about the prophet Daniel so much?
Prophet Daniel is such an amazing role model for our educators in the public school. You know, as we know, he was a prophet forced to live and work in a very secular environment, but yet required to remain holy and undefiled. And Daniel and his friends did this, and God used them in powerful ways. So Daniel 11:32 says, "The people who know their God will stand firm and take action." And so for teachers, again, living and working in this very secular environment, they can see by the example of Daniel that if they trust their God and if they rely on him, he will provide a way for them to do this, and that God will be faithful and that he will use them in powerful ways for his purposes and for his glory. So it's just such a powerful role model for these teachers.
Mm-hmm. Mindy, one of the things you've done, which I find so fascinating, is Compass has encouraged and has done kind of what they call a commissioning Sunday at a church here in town. And explain what that is and how that got started.
Yeah, you know, one of the things very early on that we desired to do was to really define this mission field for teachers. With teachers, you are looking at a group of people who are often overworked, underpaid, stretched so thin, and it's a very challenging environment. And then put, you know, having a Christian faith on top of that, yet being required to live in such a secular environment, it can be very draining and very difficult. And so one of the things we did early on in the ministry was to approach our senior pastor and ask him to do a blessing or a commissioning for our educators. And that's exactly what it was. This will be our fifth annual commissioning coming up here on September 17th. And we open it up to anyone, churches. We get people that come in from churches all over the metro for that blessing. We commission hundreds of teachers on that morning. And it's just really a time to say to them, we know that what you're doing, we are aware of what you're doing. We know that this is a mission field. We support you in this. We want to pray over you. And there are a lot of tears on that morning. Teachers go to the front of the worship center, spread the entire sanctuary, and the entire congregation prays over them. Lots of tears, always standing ovations for these teachers, and it's a powerful moment. We've had lots of feedback for teachers to say that they need that support from their church. They need for their churches to recognize the role that they play, the potential role that they have in the lives of these kids, in the lives of their colleagues, and the uniqueness of the mission field that they're a part of every day.
So, Mindy, I think we could probably encourage churches to do the same thing. What would you say to other churches to help, you know, really to disciple and support the public school professionals who are believers?
Absolutely.
I mean, how can the churches be involved?
Absolutely. You know, that is a part of our mission is to really spread the vision for what Compass does. for some reason, as we've worked with different churches here locally and around the nation, some churches are hesitant. For a couple reasons. Sometimes education can be a divisive topic among Christians. Christians have strong feelings about it, and some feel like maybe by supporting a public school ministry, by supporting public school in some ways, they're promoting it. And one thing that we're very careful with at Compass is that we are by no means public school recruiters. We encourage people to really listen to God's voice when it comes to making that decision about where they will educate their children. Churches really have an amazing opportunity to come alongside these parents, these educators who are called specifically to this mission field. And some churches, I think, struggle and really feel that perceived need for there to be a separation between church and state, that they don't want to be associated with things that are evil. But at Compass, we see the concerning shifts in our culture taking place, and that is very much reflected in our schools. All the more reason that we as Christians need to be supporting those that are the light, that are on the front lines. And so I would just really encourage these churches to take a look at that mission field, to really understand that from kindergarten through 12th grade, only over 50 million of our students will spend over 16,000 hours walking in these hallways and in these classrooms, that these educators, parents, and students find themselves in the front lines, and that they really need their churches to support them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why we would be reluctant to gather these educators together and administrators and just say, wow, we'd like to pray for you. I mean, I would think that churches would see that as a great opportunity and maybe even a trend we could use with other professions. I mean, how nice would it be to gather the police officers and firefighters from a community who are believers, who have to go out and face what they face every day and say, let's bring them to the front and pray for them. I mean, it's a great idea. And when you talk about the teachers having such an emotional response and there's tears, and I think, what a blessing for these people.
Absolutely. You know, we all have our mission field, right?
Yes.
At Compass here, we have a heart for our schools, and that's where God has called us specifically. But you're absolutely right. This concept can definitely be applied across the board to many other different professions and different mission fields too.
Okay, Mindy, if I'm more interested in finding out about how I might get a group organized in my neck of the woods, how would I go about finding this? Do you have a website?
We do. Our website is compasslink.org. If you go to the homepage, go toward the bottom, there's a link that says Start a Compass Ministry. It kind of walks you through a few steps that we encourage you to take, obviously starting in prayer, bringing together a core group of people to pray. Second, really giving you different bullet-pointed ideas of how to communicate and share why this is an important effort for churches to consider. We kind of walk through what it takes to do a commissioning service. That can be such a great step, can be so simple, but yet can be so powerful in just kind of the statement that you're making to support this mission field. And then it goes on to talk about how to start bringing together the community, the Christian community within the schools, and then going on to how you can start equipping them, things like religious liberties. We do Daniel weekends, we run parenting workshops, do multiple workshops and seminars throughout the year. So there are some great resources there. So compasslink.org, Start a Compass Ministry.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a teacher and I went to my church and I said to people at church, you know, I'm really stressed out about the start of the school year as a believer and all the pressure that's on me, I bet people at my church would say, hey, let's pray for you.
Yeah.
So aren't we just doing that on a little slightly bigger scale?
Absolutely.
A lovely idea.
You know, it all starts in prayer. And we've just found with this unique mission field, they gain so much encouragement and from connecting with each other. You know, no one understands your mission field than others walking those same shoes. Mm-hmm. And so to bring together, they find so much benefit and so much encouragement in just coming together in prayer and in support of each other and in accountability, really challenging each other to, you know, take some of those steps of faith that God might be already calling them to take. But it definitely all starts with prayer.
And it all started in your living room. So if you want to start a ministry of any kind, it's a good place to do is in Mindy's living room. So just call her.
Absolutely. Right. You're always welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Mindy Heine, thank you so much from Compass. We'll take a short break and be back with lots more Ann Bradley coming up at 20 minutes until the hour. I like that, Eric Metaxas. And how often do you get to say dank bowels of the slave ship? Not very often. All right, we've got a great interview coming up with Dr. Ann Bradley from the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics. So we're going to have a conversation with her in about 9 minutes. We're going to break for news for right now. Thanks for being with us this morning. Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, maintaining a positive attitude, praying and following God's leading will allow you to thrive and minister in your workplace, home, and church throughout your life. Here's Dr. Lars Dunberg and his very cool accent.
I think as long as you have strength and can move, you move. My spirit feels 30 years younger than I am. My body feels 30 years older than I am. And so you're trying to combine a way to get that to work. But I think it's all in an attitude. I can talk about every illness I have every minute of the day, or I can say, forget that. It's not going to improve it. And let's get on and see, taste and see the Lord is good and share him with the world and see what blessings I will bring to you. I've never had a richer life.
If I could pull off that accent, I would get much better tables at restaurants. Anyway, if you want to hear that entire interview, that's Dr. Lars Dunberg. You can go to myfaithradio.com and type in basics serving or Dr. Lars Dunberg. You'll hopefully get to that interview. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Dr. Ann Bradley's with us.
Mom, Dad, if your child is approaching the teen years, brace yourself. Because the reality is, the stress of dealing with a troubled teen can tear a family apart. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When teens begin to struggle, their problems put pressure on everyone in the family, especially mom and dad. So consider these practical steps to protect your marriage in the years to come. First, see conflict with your kids as something you must tackle as a teen. Second, be intentional about sharing your feelings with each other. And finally, build in some time to have fun. Get away and laugh a little. Getting through the hard times won't be easy, but when you stick together, even the greatest struggle can have the power to strengthen your marriage.
For more parenting tips from Mark Gregston, go to parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
And it is shining. The sun is shining. How nice is that? Anywhere, here it is in Minneapolis-St. Paul area. It is shining nicely. We start the Minnesota State Fair today, which is going to be about 12 days of complete mayhem. Anyway, I have Dr. Ann Bradley on the studio line with us this morning. And good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Now, let's discuss where you might be right now.
I know everybody will be jealous. I'm at a Honda dealership because my car broke down this morning.
Oh, so. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. We're working on it. So
you're actually at the dealership doing the interview.
I am, you know.
I love you, Ann.
Interviews in crazy places sometimes.
I love you. Thanks so much.
Listen, but we must persevere.
Yes,
right?
Indeed. I want to talk about your book, Counting the Cost, Christian Perspectives on Capitalism, as you are counting the cost of your Honda repair right now.
That's right. Yeah, so we're very excited about this book. We were able to partner with Abilene Christian University Press, and Art Lindsley and myself were the editors. And what's great, I think, about the book is that it's a compilation of a lot of voices that we've brought together to try to really address the concerns that Christians bring towards capitalism. I think there's a lot of real questions that people have from a biblical and Christian perspective. And so we try to dedicate each chapter to address one of those critiques and just to provide a thoughtful way for people to think through, you know, kind of the modern issues of what kind of economic system should we have.
Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of emceeing at fundraisers. And, you know, every time I go to one of these fundraisers, what's the first thing they want to appeal to when it comes to the ask? And that is, who can give generously, right?
That's right.
And where does that usually originate? People that have some means? People who might believe in capitalism?
That's exactly right. One of the kind of profound insights, I think, that you can kind of see in these stories in this book is that to be generous financially, we have to be profitable financially. Mm-hmm. And we're not all going to have the same income, and that's okay. We also deal with that issue in the book. I think in the modern world we live in, we tend to assign or associate dignity and worth with income and fame. That's not a biblical notion. That's certainly part of the world's narrative. But it's not the narrative that we should have. It's that we all have something to give, and that market-based economies are the best ways that enable each one of us to give all we have. And then all of us are enabled, from the CEO to the janitor and everybody in between. We're all enabled to not only serve our neighbor and serve strangers, but to benefit financially. And then we can all give. Now, you know, again, I think that it's important to stress that we're not all going to be Bill Gates or Mark Cuban. We're not all called to have that wealth, but it's okay that we can flourish and we can be generous and we can serve one another. If we're all living in poverty, it's hard to even share, let alone be generous with what we have because we don't have very much.
Mm-hmm. And I think we hear these arguments about capitalism hurting the poor, but it's just the opposite, isn't it?
It is the opposite, and this is perhaps a counterintuitive idea. We have this notion, and if you watch movies, if you watch television, it's all over the place. The narrative is that corporations are run by greedy people and that they exploit people, and so the richer one gets, they get rich because they take money from the poor and the middle class. I think that's a dangerous narrative because it actually suggests that we should punish the rich because that just solely because they're rich. Now, you know, if you look at the last 200 years of human history, why is it that poverty is, you know, kind of being stamped out? It's because people are getting richer, and the way they're getting richer is by finding creative ways to solve problems. So think of all the inventions, any invention you can think of over the last 200 years, from the electric light bulb to large motors to the laptop to the cell phone that you carry in your pocket. These things are brought to you by strangers who had ideas.
Yeah.
And we want strangers to have ideas, and we want them to care enough about ordinary people like us that we can benefit from them.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about, you know, the rich getting richer at the expense of others. Well, talk about that a little bit.
Sure. And I think it's certainly possible. So we don't want to be naive here. It is very possible for, and in some places in the world, you're rich because you're exploiting, because, you know, there are societies that are run by political thugs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to do away with that. But, you know, the question that we are dealing with is whether capitalism is one of those systems. Does capitalism or a market-based system foster exploitation? It doesn't. It actually puts exploitation on the decline. Now, you know, the thing about capitalism or communism or socialism or any ism is that we're always dealing with human beings, always and everywhere. So you're never going to stamp greed off the planet. You're never going to get fully rid of sin. Capitalism can't do that. But what capitalism does that's unique is that it provides incentives through profits for the rich to actually think about and care about the needs of others so much so that they have to stay rich. They have to keep creating.
Mm-hmm.
They have to, you know, keep producing. And that's what we want. That's a system where we're all interdependent. We need each other rather than kind of an exploitative system where one is at the top and people at the bottom never get out of the bottom.
Mm-hmm. And if we can, I'm going to take a break. And when I come back, I want to ask you about the biblical perspective on capitalism. So that's kind of a question I want to come back to. Talking to Dr. Ann Bradley, her book is out now. It's called Counting the Cost, Christian Perspectives on Capitalism. We'll take a very short break and be back. We are back. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Ann Bradley from the Faith work and economics at the Institute. And Anna, I got a question for you. What do you think is really the biggest argument against capitalism? Is it a younger generation that's thinking they want to drift more towards socialism? And haven't they read the history books? Things don't turn out well.
I actually think that it comes from a really good place. I think it comes from a place of caring about the poor deeply. We know that the millennial and up-and-coming generation very much cares about the poor. They have a heart for justice. Those are good things. Those
great
are biblical things.
Yes.
Great things. And I think they're really worried about inequality, which is, you know, a very complex topic. There's social inequality. There's income inequality. So I think, you know, broadly, they're worried about inequality. And how does that fit into kind of capitalism and socialism? And we've talked about this a little bit before on the show. It sounds good on paper to talk about a socialist type of system because it sounds kind of neat and tidy that we have a central government and that we can allocate it with the responsibility of figuring these things out so that, you know, we can maybe even they distribute and produce a lot of the resources so that we don't have to worry about the inequalities and we don't have to worry about, you know, income disparity and justice is solved. But the problem is that history, as you mentioned, doesn't tell the same story. And it's because, you know, what looks good on paper doesn't always work in practice. Why? Because we ignore some of the truths of human nature, which is no government ever, the best one that you can think of to the worst one that you can think of, has an omnipotent, benevolent person that we can put in charge. So it's really not about that. It's about institutions that restrain power, but also foster flourishing. And it seems that limited government, along with capitalism and market-based systems, as well as a culture that supports truth-seeking and diversity of thought and open questions. I mean, this is Michael Novak's contribution, and he has the first chapter in our book. And he spent his life talking about these ideas. He kind of talked about the three-legged stool, but it's not just capitalism, it's capitalism, limited government, and a culture that supports ideas and a pluralistic society. And those things are hard to come by, but I think that's really the answer. I think he was right all along.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got Labor Day coming up. And what does that mean to an economist?
Well, it's funny because everybody takes Labor Day off to not labor. And, you know, I think Labor Day is maybe a time to celebrate the biblical idea of work, which is that work isn't a curse. It's a good thing. If we go back and read Genesis, it was something we were supposed to do before the fall. In fact, it's what we're created to do. And I think rest is important. We live in a busy world and a busy culture. This is my problem with the culture, is that we encourage busy. It's kind of like if you're busy, then you're winning and you're important. Mm-hmm. And I think Labor Day is a good time to step back from that and ask questions about, is this what God is really calling me to do? Am I doing the right thing? Would I change my work if he asked me to? And to celebrate that we have work. And then for those of us who don't have the work that we want, to really be in prayer about where God is leading us and trusting that he's going to take care of us. So I think it's a moment to reflect mm-hmm. and to enjoy family time, of course.
Of course. So, Anne, talk about labor unions. And what has their impact been on the American economy?
Yeah, this is a good thing to talk about. I enjoy this conversation in my classroom because we have to understand our history and the history of labor unions. They played an important role at one point. I think when you think about the history 100 years ago, 75 years ago, people didn't have telework opportunities. You lived in a small town with a coal mine, and that was your only option for work. Labor unions were an important way for the workers to come together collectively and bargain with the single employer in a town so that they weren't taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
So we call this kind of collective bargaining. And it can be really important in certain employment environments where there might only be one employer. So 100 years ago, you could see that this was very important. It's becoming less important because of technology and also just because of the competition in labor markets. So it's not as frequent, at least in the United States, to find a town that only has one, you know, employer.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, people can telework. They can drive to other towns. You know, most people have cars. Most people have Wi-Fi connections. And so this allows people to overcome this kind of worry about being exploited by the boss. Mm-hmm. And so I actually think that modern day reliance on labor unions tends to be more political. Political bargaining to kind of protect wages or to elevate wages higher than they would be. And so in that sense, I think some of the work of modern-day labor unions is destructive because it doesn't encourage innovation. It doesn't encourage, training and technological progress as much as I think we would get it in some industries where we could do away with them.
So unions, do they typically help production or hamper it?
Well, what they do is they basically allow workers to get paid more than the market would pay them normally. Mm-hmm. So if you're not in a teacher's union, but, you might not get paid as much. And so what this does, if you automatically can get a higher rate of wage, there's a natural incentive in that built in to not have to work as hard to be productive. And again, this is not a claim against people who are in labor unions. It's a claim against the institution. The institution discourages innovation. Why? Because you already have a wage that's higher than it would be otherwise. Whereas if you didn't have that, you have to work and be productive so that you can get a wage. And so it's all about the incentives that these establish. Again, we're not making any claims against the people that they're bad or evil, nothing like that. It's just the institution tends to hamper productivity. We don't get as much productivity as fast as we could get it otherwise.
Okay. Now, you just mentioned something a couple of minutes ago that I want to return to, and that was, as we're thinking about Labor Day, and you asked a kind of a big question. You said, would you change your job if God asked you to? Mm. And that's a 104-mile-an-hour fastball.
It sure is.
So few people can hit.
And we all have to think about this, myself included. I think this is a tough one because it requires real vulnerability and real faith and trust that if God said to me tomorrow, stop being an economist, I have other plans for you, or you're going to use those skills doing something totally different, mm-hmm. would I say yes? Would I listen? I'd probably fight it because change is hard. It's hard for all of us. It's mm-hmm. scary. It brings the unknown. But we all have to go where he leads us because mm-hmm. he's created us for a purpose. And so I think we have to be willing and very prayerful about those things and open to the new paths he's going to direct us on. And I think that's exciting if we really trust him. So it's all about just kind of committing ourselves to that trust and prayer in him every day. That's a hard one. You're right. It's a fastball.
And how good are economists at listening to God's voice?
Probably not. We're probably not the shining example in anything, which is why people run away from us at parties. So, different story.
I would not run away from you. And thank you so much for your inconvenient morning that you're not letting this get in the way of you coming on the show and being, again, a brilliant guest, which I so appreciate.
It's a pleasure.
And I hope your car situation gets fixed and it's not too expensive.
Oh, it's, you know what? And I couldn't fix it myself, so it's because of capitalism that I get to have this interview and the
isn't that the truth?
You have to look at it that way.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a pleasure.
Yes,
exactly.
And you're happy to pay someone to fix your car, aren't you?
I am blessed to pay someone to fix it.
Yep. Yeah, amen. All right, Ann.
Otherwise, I'd be riding a wooden bike or something. It would be bad.
Thanks for doing the show, and happy Labor Day, and I'll talk to you again soon in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Take care.
You bet. It's 4 minutes until the top of the hour. That was Dr. Ann Bradley from the Faith Work and Economics Institute. We'll take a short break and be back to wrap up the big show.
Much, but I'll make it. A day at a time. About tomorrow, that old sun just might not shine, so I take it day at a time.
We absolutely don't share your email address with anyone. We think. We're not very good with the technological stuff. Join us on the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Thank you so much for listening today. You have encouraged me, and I would like you to try to go out and do the same. Go encourage someone else. I'm going to go do that as well today because you have encouraged me, so I want to take that encouragement and share it with somebody else. And I'm going to say my verse of the day one more time as I flipped open my Bible this morning. Psalm 116, I love the Lord, for he heard my voice. He heard my cry for mercy. Because he turned his ear to me, I will call on him as long as I live. There we go. That wraps up the show. I will see you tomorrow. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.